So it's the 15th of October 2010. My name's Minnie Lake, one of the researchers.
And I'm Anne Greenleaf, another researcher.
And I'm Phyllis Lloyd, the Intro President at the University of Washington.
Welcome. Okay, so we'll just start out by asking you to talk about the process and how it came to your attention. So just sort of from the beginning, specifically we're thinking of the matter of the terminated workers in Honduras at the Vision Tech and Hugger factories.
I'm trying to remember when it first came to my attention, but I know that when I was asked to serve on the Nike board, mm-hmm. There were some faculty who protested and didn't think that it was good for me to do that. Among them was Jim Gregory and Angelina Godoy. Mm-hmm. And I offered to meet with them, to talk with them about my motivation and why I thought it would be good for the University of Washington and good for me. Mm-hmm. And I did meet with both of them, and when Angelina met with me, she asked me whether or not it would be all right with her if she kept me informed as to how things went. And I said, sure. And I started serving on the board, and they talked a little bit about the challenges that they were facing, because the workers that had been laid off were not in the factory that they had contracted with, but in the subcontracting factory, so mm-hmm. a factory that that factory had contracted with. Mm-hmm. And that they felt a more limited sense of responsibility because it wasn't in one of the factories that they had contracted with. So I took that information in just as information. And it was pretty quiet after that. But when, and I wish I could remember the dates, but at some point later, and I should give you the background that when I accepted the position, I wrote a letter to the senior vice president saying that any issues between Nike and UW, I would recuse myself from. Mm-hmm. So that there was basically a wall between me and any conversations that were on relative to contracts or licensing agreements. So I have tried very, very hard to maintain that wall. I mean, I sent that letter to Nike as well, mm-hmm. and they understood that anything having to do with the University of Washington, they needed me not to be involved in that conversation. Angelina Godoy, at some later point, wrote me an email saying that she just wanted me to know, because she said, you asked me to do this. She wanted me to know that she had just met with Axel-like people at several different universities, and that that there might likely be action from multiple universities against Nike, urging each of their universities to no longer renew their contracts with them. And so I felt that since this wasn't the University of Washington, but really all, not all, but several universities with which Nike had a relationship, that I could feel free to talk about that from my position in higher education. So you should know that the reason why, I believe, that the reason why Nike was interested in my being a member of their board was because I have higher education experience, and mm-hmm. they have been very interested in having someone with that kind of experience on their board. They right now have someone whose name is Jill Kerr Conway, who was previously the president at Smith College, and Jill, I believe, has mentioned that she might want to retire from the board in the next mm-hmm. few years. And so, good succession planning, they went looking for a possible replacement. And I actually don't know how they came up with my name, but they asked me whether or not, a search firm asked me whether or not I would serve on the board, and I went through a whole interview process with lots of people, including their nominating committee, etc. So I went onto the board, and they asked me to serve on the Corporate Responsibility Committee. Jill Kerr Conway is currently the chairman of that committee. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was clear that what they were tr- clear to me what they were trying to do was to prepare me to possibly take over the chairmanship of that committee.
Mm-hmm.
When Angelina Godoy wrote me that email and said, you know, that there were multiple universities, I thought that from just a higher education perspective, not from the UW perspective, and as a member of the Corporate Responsibility Committee, because that's what the committee that they put me on,
mm-hmm.
that I should just alert them to the fact that they might be vulnerable at multiple universities. And so I did. And we actually were having a board meeting very soon thereafter, and they said, we should talk about this. And so they talked about what they were thinking about doing, and I said that I thought those were all very good ideas. And I thought that it might be important for them to consider the fact that the reason why so many universities were worried or starting to take actions was because of the specific workers that that had been laid off. Not for the workforce in Honduras, but for those particular workers, and that they should focus their attention on those. And, you know, they told us that they would think about it. So Hannah Jones and her colleagues told us that we would think about it. And I told her that, you know, I didn't want to get deeply involved in this, but as a member of the Corporate Responsibility Committee, you know, I just felt it was important for me to talk with them. And later I found out that they had worked out this agreement with the workers to figure out ways to, and I am actually not sure whether it's actual compensation to the workers or how it's being done.
Great. Okay, that's really helpful. So a couple of follow-up questions. Can you just give us a little background? So you were approached by a search committee to serve on the board. Can you talk about a little about your own motivations and how you see your role at UW fitting in with your role on the corporate board? And
yeah, so I was contacted by a search firm.
Mm-hmm.
The search firm then learns a little bit more about me, and then they gave my name to the nominating committee, and I can't even remember how many people there are, but four or five. And then I was interviewed by each member of the nominating committee, and then after they felt that I was qualified, they gave my name to Mark Parker, who is the CEO, and also to Phil Knight, who is the chairman of the board, and I interviewed with each one of them. There was then taken a full vote, and I was accepted. And then the stockholders actually just voted this last time. So it's a two-step affair.
Mm-hmm.
So, but your other question was, why did I think it was important for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always up for learning new things, and I've never served on a corporate board before.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got the phone call, my first answer was, you gotta be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm qualified for this. I have never played in competitive university sports. The athletics department actually doesn't report to me, so I don't know a whole lot about athletics at the University of Washington. So why are you interested in me?
Mm-hmm.
And they said that there were probably a couple of reasons. They knew that I was deeply involved in founding the College of the Environment, so I was very, very involved with sustainability, and
mm-hmm.
Nike takes some pride in trying to manufacture in a sustainable way. They're always trying to use less petroleum-based products, fewer petroleum-based products and less of them. They're always trying to figure out how to recycle their shoes and their apparel. They're trying to use less cotton in their shirts because cotton takes so much water. They are trying all sorts of different ways of you know, not using air freight, but using water and rail and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. So they knew that I had a great interest in the College of the mm-hmm. Environment and environmental sustainability. I think they were interested in that. I think the second thing is, I bet that they were very interested in getting someone who was at a university where sports was an integral part of the education of students, right? So, I mean, I have no idea how they came up with me, but you go on to the major universities and you look to see whether or not there's someone in the provost position or the president's position who might be qualified. And I do know that all corporate boards are looking for diversity. I'm sure you've heard that corporate boards are trying to elect more women and more people of color, and Nike is no exception. Mm-hmm. They have two African Americans on their board, and they right now, before me, had one woman. They had had two. One of them resigned to take a position in Nike, and so resigned from the board. So I am sure that the fact that I am a woman and I'm a woman of color was part of their consideration. I would like to believe that that wasn't what drove them, but when they noticed that I had had considerable experience in the academy and in public education at the higher education level, and that I was a woman of color, mm-hmm. that they said, well, we should look into this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For my part, I have to say, I didn't know whether I would be interested in this, but I did get a chance to interview with all of the members of the nominating committee, and every single one of them is unbelievably impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Their backgrounds, their scope of activity, their experience in leadership was so impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself knowing that if I were able to do this, if they did elect me, if I passed all the gates, that I would probably gain more than I would give, particularly the first year. And I also really did believe that if they weren't going to choose me, they were going to go to another university and find someone from that university. And I think that the University of Washington should be at the table. I'm a great believer that you should be at the table at the discussion, as opposed to yelling in or writing letters or emails or whatever, complaining about things. And you know, I just feel very strongly about trying to give in that way. Jim Gregory said to me, Phyllis, it's almost like serving on the board of Enron or Exxon, mm-hmm. you know, right after the Exxon Valdez. I think that's actually the one he said. And he didn't ask me a question because he just told me that. And it gave me food for thought because I went home and I thought, okay, so which boards would I not be willing to serve on?
Mm-hmm.
And if I had been asked to serve on the Exxon board after the Valdez oil spill, I think I would have been willing to do that as well.
Mm.
Because I think that I hope that I could get them to be convinced that they better do something so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. So I started to think, so which ones would I not be willing to do? And I think I would not be willing to serve on a tobacco board.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that I don't know of any benefit to smoking. And I don't know of any tobacco company that is really looking for ways of using tobacco or modifying tobacco in ways that doesn't cause health problems. And I was at the University of Kentucky for a while,
mm-hmm.
where, I mean, in Kentucky, tobacco is a huge part of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an Institute of Tobacco and Health.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Those two words don't come together for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fortunately, I've never been asked to serve on the Philip Morris board or
yeah.
R.J. Reynolds or...
Yeah. Great. That's really helpful. So one thing I'm curious about, can you tell us a little bit about the subcommittee of the board that does the corporate social responsibility work? So who else is on it, how many people, and sort of how is it structured?
So I would have to look it up, but mm-hmm. There are probably five people on it. And so the way the board meetings work is we go on one afternoon and there are committee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a corporate responsibility board, there's a finance board, there's an audit board, there's an executive compensation board.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the four major ones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid I'm a little bit embarrassed that I don't know the organizational structure. But I've been asked to serve on the corporate responsibility board, so we go and we get a big packet of material before we go to the board meeting. We're supposed to prepare, and I use the weekend to read over all the material. And then when we get to the meeting, that committee meeting, the agenda of it is set up by the chair of the board and also the director, the internal director, so the vice president of the corporate responsibility committee,
mm-hmm.
In Nike, and they talk with each other and form the agenda. And so Nike has several presentations that they give to us. It's usually about a two-hour meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we discuss all sorts of issues, including the progress that they've made in material that they use, the progress that they've made in influencing other countries, and the progress that they've made in labor issues in their factories and their subcontracting factories. We talked about the Honduras situation and what they were trying to do and what they had done already. And then the following morning, we have what's called the full board meeting, and Mark Parker and the CFO make a presentation, and Phil Knight makes a presentation, and then each of the committees make a presentation of what we did the night before, the afternoon before.
Mm-hmm. Great. So at one point when you were sort of summarizing the whole experience, you were talking about when Nike presented to you the Corporate Social Responsibility Committee about what was going on, and your response was, oh, those seem like good ideas. So can you just tease out a little bit what some of the ideas they presented to you were?
Yeah, they were talking about going to Honduras and providing opportunities for employment, mm-hmm. for factory workers that made Nike products. But they weren't necessarily trying to find positions for those workers who had been displaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it was very generous to be thinking about workers in general in apparel factories and shoe factories where Nike products were being made. But I did emphasize that I thought what was really hurting, the people that were really hurting the most, were the people who had been displaced from the particular factories that had laid off workers and hadn't given them severance pay. And I think they were very thoughtful about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was... I think they went back and thought about it some more and thought, well, my goodness, maybe we should be focusing on the particular people who work displaced and not just all workers who work in factories in Honduras.
Mm-hmm. Great. So one of the things we're trying to get from all of our interviewees is to understand sort of where people's various sources of information was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, it sounds like one of the sources was the Nike presentation to your board. And then also Angelina was keeping you updated. Did you have interactions with, say, President Emmert or the AFSL committee or the student group staff? All of those players were also involved.
Yeah. So I have not talked with President Emmert about this. We had said that, you know, I would not do that. And I have not talked with members of the ACTL committee either.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was being considered for this, and when Angelina Godoy and Jim Gregory talked with me, they told me about the workers'
rights consortium.
Yes, the workers' rights consortium, and also the FLA. I can't remember what that stands for.
Fair Labor Association.
Mm-hmm. Also about SLAP. And so I just went onto their websites to learn more about how each of them felt. I also went onto the Nike website, you know, when I was being considered for this, to see what they said about all of this. So those were my main sources of information.
Okay. I think I'm done with my initial.
Okay. So could you, well, actually, just to build on that, and your discussions with the Corporate Social Responsibility Committee at Nike, what did you perceive Nike's primary concerns to be during the negotiation process? Did you have a sense that they of what their priorities were and how they were kind of coming to a decision about this?
You know, I think, and here you should really talk with Hannah, because I can't read her mind and read their minds. But, I mean, I am very impressed with the corporate responsibility that Nike really demonstrates. And I think, you know, in the early 1990s, they went through a really terrible period of time when they were accused of bad labor practices. And they spent a lot of time and a lot of money trying to correct those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're pretty proud of the fact that they are in that world of apparel and shoes, probably the most, or one of the most, responsible. And I have heard actually from Sally Jewell, who's the CEO of REI, that when an internal audit was done for REI, that they said, the auditor said, you know, you ought to look to Nike to see what they're doing, because they're a model to follow. And so I really believe that they are pretty proud of the record they've had ever since after the early 1990s, and I think they didn't want their reputation to be damaged by this. I think that, you know, I think people's first reaction when you get criticized sometimes is a little bit defensive. Mm-hmm. We really didn't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't our factory. It was the subcontracting factory that we really did make every effort to sell all the equipment in that factory and use that money. And there should have been enough money there to do it, but the Honduran government had just fallen and there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, good governance going on, that there wasn't really Nike apparel being made in there for the last few months before the severance occurred, that even if there was, which I don't think they were willing to admit that there was, and you know, who knows, that it wasn't UW or university apparel, that it was for something else. So I think their first reaction might have been, this is not our fault, mm-hmm. and we are going to do everything we can, but we are not going to compensate the workers, because this would start a whole chain of events where we would be responsible for every subcontracting factory. And of course, in good economic times, when the demand is higher than any of their factories that they contract with, and so I should make it clear that Nike doesn't own any factories, but they contract with factories, right? Mm-hmm. That any of their contracting factories, when they're overloaded with requests and demands, and in order to make it, they subcontract, right? Mm-hmm. And Nike felt that, my goodness, in really good times, they may even be subcontracting from Zunk. Where does the supply chain responsibility end for Nike? And so they wanted to be sure mm-hmm. that they were fair, but didn't set a precedent that now every subcontracting and then every subcontracting of the subcontracting would go back to Nike.
Yeah. That's great. So on that note as well, then, what kind of precedent do you think this negotiation might set for the future? Just in your own opinion, do you think, how important do you think this decision was or is for the field of supply chain issues and corporate social responsibility in general? Do you think, I know Nike was careful in the wording of the mm-hmm. compensation package not to take on too much legal responsibility mm-hmm. in order to avoid setting the kind of precedent that you've talked about, but how do you place that in the broader field of corporate social responsibility?
You know, that's a hard question to answer. I really don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I think they did. They were very careful to both talk with the unions and their legal counsel mm-hmm. in terms of how not to make this mm-hmm. precedent setting. But I don't know the real answer to that question.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Ben, do you want to follow up on that issue at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So, what do you perceive the alternative to licensing Nike products might have been for the university? I know this you weren't necessarily involved in that decision-making process. That was the realm of President Emmett. But if you have any insight or knowledge into what the alternatives for the university might have been had they let the contract with Nike expire and... Yeah, I mean, maybe.
So, you know that it's the contract, not the major contract, right, that we're discussing right now. I'm assuming that we would have just contracted with others. We do now. You know, we have Under Armour, and if you go into our... The way I judge this is a little I know. If you go into our bookstore...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's not only Nike stuff with the W on it, right? There's Umbro, there's Adidas, there's all sorts of things. In fact, you know, when I first got on the board, I went to the bookstore to see what there was, because other people had told me that Nike apparel was actually good quality, and so I wanted to go see whether or not there were lots of things with the W and the swoosh. And I was surprised to see just how many things did not have it. And that's when I had to go back and educate myself about the fact that, oh, what this really means is that Nike's one of the companies that can sell things with a W on it, right? But not everything in our bookstore, for example, that has a W on it has a swoosh on it.
Yeah. And then, so how important do you perceive, obviously Nike was in negotiation with the University of Washington, with various other universities, and then with the Fair Labor Association, Workers' Rights Consortium. There were many different avenues from which they were being pressured. Can you speak at all to how important the universities, well, UW in particular, but then universities in general were for the Nike board's decision?
You know, I think that again has to be a question that you ask of Hannah.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, no one wants a black mark, right, on their reputation. But I don't know, how important. And I do know that, for example, Wisconsin, which did break the contract, is not a Nike school.
Yeah.
And so there's a difference, I think, between the impact of breaking that kind of contract with a non-Nike school.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you have any conversations with University of Wisconsin, Madison, or with Cornell, or any of the other universities?
No.
Okay. How did you got the information about their decisions through Nike or through Angelina?
No, through Angelina Godoy. But there was stuff going on the AAUP website. Mm-hmm. There was conversations going on, and I don't know how those people keep up with it. I actually don't have the time. So, but people were passing me information about, did you know that Cornell had just broken their contract? Mm-hmm. Did you know that Wisconsin had just broken their contract? But I hadn't gone looking for it. Mm-hmm. But so I don't want to look uninterested, but I do have to say, I really believe that it's important for the academy and the corporate world to talk with each other much more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't spend a whole lot of time Googling lots of different businesses and finding out what their practices are in social responsibility.
Yeah,
of course, sure.
So you've spoken about this a little bit already as well, but just to ask the question directly, what was your level of awareness around labor issues in connection with apparel production before this event took place?
Before I got on Nike?
Yeah.
Virtually none.
Okay.
Virtually none.
So we have one other question, which also I think you've kind of responded to a little bit, but there were a range of there was a range of claims about how much money was owed to the terminated workers, and there were various different components of the settlement package or the final package. Were these different components ever discussed in that meeting, in the meetings that you attended, or was that okay?
No, so that's another really interesting thing in terms of what people's understanding of what corporate boards do. We do not get down into the weeds and say, please take this line out of what you were going to communicate with the Honduran workers and put this line in or revise this word or, you know, that's not the level of advice that we give.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you
want to
ask?
No, I think this is good.
So will we get to see this? We who've been interviewed?
Yeah, of course. As soon as it's finally, I imagine the process of compiling all this information will be a long process, but I think the plan is at least to build the archive as we're going. So material.
You've talked with Mark Emmert, you've talked with Angelina, and you've talked with Margaret, and now me.
Yeah, and we have a few other, we're trying to interview the SLAP student, from the Student Labor Action Project.
Mm-hmm.
We want to speak to people at Workers' Rights Consortium, at the Fair Labor Association, at Nike, at the other universities. We're interested in speaking with people at Cornell and UW Madison. We're also looking into the Estefel case and the Russell case, which the university was also involved in prior to this. So it's a kind of big project at the moment, but we'll definitely...
So are you having fun?
Yeah.
Are you learning
very
well?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what are your backgrounds?
We're actually both in political science. We're third-year doctoral students.
I work on human rights, international law issues, not necessarily connected to corporate social responsibility, but I've worked on corporate social responsibility in the past with NGOs. Mm-hmm. And we both work with Margaret Levy, who's kind of spearheaded this project.
Yeah, I mainly study Chinese law and politics.
No,
supply chains aren't really my primary focus, but I do legal stuff, and obviously there are a lot of supply chain issues that end in China.
So I don't know if you had any other insights that we haven't framed questions around that you would want to share with us, or you think you've kind of covered.
I think you've covered it very well.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else that we were going to ask.
Yeah.
Okay.